Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio.
Footy's on the radio.
And your front row. Welcome to the Sunday Rough.
For McDonald's Family McValue Box.
Triple M rocks footy.
Well, maybe last week was the anomaly. They've lost every other game outside of last week. Maybe the first 4 weeks were the true form. And the UH Saints have demolished the Hawks.
If we continue to have performances like that, then there'll need to be catastrophic change, and that's not usually the way we go about doing things.
This is the fall of two great clubs. Sydney, it now looks real that they're no good. Hawthorn, it now looks real that they're no good.
There it is. Blues have upended the Swans.
We're playing an unacceptable brand of football. It takes a long time to develop a brand and a reputation as a team, and it doesn't take long to lose that.
An incredible day of footy yesterday, and how the mighty have fallen. The Hawks, semi-finalists last year, 1-5 with a percentage of 65.2. Just what does catastrophic change mean? The Swans, grand finalists last year, 0-6, sitting in 18th position. Johnny Longmire, the coach of the Swans, will join us later on to tell us exactly how the Swans are going to turn their season around. Big win for the Blues yesterday. Their skipper, Mark Murphy, joins us on the Sunday Rub. Competition sharpshooter Dan Menzel jumps in the box to join us. And from the Pies, what a week they've had. Brenton Sanderson, an assistant coach and a great mate of Nathan Buckley, tells us all about a tough week at the footy club. Plus, the quiz. Jay-Z has got all the big news. And after all that, the Pies take on the Cats at a sun-drenched MCG. Extraordinary day of football yesterday. When I look around some of the names in this box, even some of them are shaking their heads. Hello, Swatter. Great to see you. A crazy day of football in some ways, historically.
Yeah, look, it might be a little premature, but I felt like yesterday was a changing of the guard. Two great powerhouses are on the way down and going quickly, and a couple of young teams starting to step up. In relation to today, win, lose or draw, I hope the Magpies set another record of tackling pressure today, because they need to do it and they need to send a strong statement.
Paul Roos is here. Roos, you've been involved in football a long time. You called one of those games yesterday. An amazing day at the footy.
Yeah, it was an amazing day. Look, I think the Swans are in a fair bit better shape than Hawthorn, as silly as it sounds, 0-6. I mean, and we'll talk to John Longmire later on. Now, they wouldn't expect to be 0-6, let's be clear on that, but they've got a lot of young players playing at the moment, whereas I think if you look at Hawthorn, yeah, it's a very, very different scenario over there. 44 tackles, yeah, Hawks yesterday. I just think there's just a real lack of intent, and the fact that you can't win contested ball, and they haven't been able to do that for a long period of time, but now they can't kick the ball around, they're uncontested. So really, they don't have a game plan. So it's very, very difficult to win a game of football.
The Ducky's in the house, fired up and ready to go for the quiz. He's just knocked over one or two kebabs, smelling magnificent as always. Hello, Ducky boy.
G'day, gentlemen, listeners. Beautiful day for footy. Looking forward to today. But yesterday was a day of shock. I know BT described it as a day of sadness. For me, it was shock Saturday. I think no one expected that to happen. I think we all gave the Saints a chance, but certainly not by 75 points. And I don't think anyone gave Carlton a chance. So just goes to show you that this competition, despite we all think that there's a massive gap, shows you that gap is just getting closer and closer. And some of the almighty are struggling.
And this man, the best in the business, news hound for Triple M, amongst others, Jay-Z Clark. Jay-Z, you hear the words in the press conference, catastrophic change. Great to see you. Boy, gee, catastrophic change are strong words.
Yeah, well, he's been telling us, Alistair Clarkson, that the media have been overreacting. There's been a lot of hysteria about the form. I think yesterday's form showed that we were across it, really, and that the 75 and 86 and 86-point losses do spell some serious troubles for the Hawks. There'll be two big stories this week in the media, Howie. Got absolutely no doubt about this one. Depending on today's result, will be Nathan Buckley's future. Massive game against Carlton next week if they lose today. And the second one will be the big watch on the selection at Hawthorn, because I've got a feeling, Duck, that there'll be some casualties.
It's really important that when you listen to someone speak, that you listen to everything they say. Now, in the media, this is what we do at times. We listen to that word, catastrophic. Now, if you listen to the whole sentence and take it as a whole, if we continue this form, there will be catastrophic changes if we continue. That's not next week. That is if they continue to play. Now, they've already had three big losses, I know that, but that was the start of the sentence. If we continue to have this form,
this coming
there'll
from
be
a man
catastrophic
that
mistakes.
I feel may have been misquoted a couple of times in the media. So, Duck, you're very savvy to that. But nevertheless, Jay-Z, it was a strong statement. What do the Hawks do, Ruzzi? At what stage do you think, right, we need to start rebuilding for this season? We need to start looking ahead? What do they do? And is there any blokes pushing up in the VFL? They've had a dearth of top picks in the last 5 years due to the success. So I'm not sure how many blokes they've got banging down the doors.
Well, I think Hawthorn, as I said, are a little bit different to the Swans because Hawthorn have had such a distinctive game plan. And for me, it's less around personnel. It's now, Alistair, educating the next generation of how they actually want to play. So if you've got a game plan that's built around not necessarily winning contested possession, but putting pressure on around the ball, dump kicks going into your back 50, Josh Gibson zoning off, really good intercept mark, and then you get into an uncontested kicking game, they can't do that now. They haven't been winning contested ball for, they won it last week, but I mean, it's not something, I mean, remember Alistair talking last year, he wasn't really concerned about his contested ball, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, Howie, it's more around what are they going to construct their game plan around.
It's been based on skill level, Ruzzi.
Exactly right.
As simple as that. So if you haven't the skill level, and clearly players, their confidence, whether it's confidence or it is actually skill level, is, you know, only probably Clarko who sees them every week and at training under no pressure. But under pressure right now, their skill level is not up to scratch. And the turnovers and the way they're still trying to pull that trigger on kicks and not capable of doing it. And therefore, their whole plan that got them to so many grand finals has just fallen apart.
Ruzzi, so does Clarko pull the trigger on game plan variations now? Because that's going to be an education process over the next 4 to 6 weeks, you would imagine. And the scoreboard almost becomes secondary when you're going through that process.
I think you have to, because I agree with Duck. I just don't think they've got the skill level. Look, Birchall will come back, we know that. But I tell you who's not coming back, Sammy Mitchell, who's their best decision maker and best kick, and Jordan Lewis, who's their second best decision maker. So they're not coming back to play. Tommy Mitchell, I love Tommy. Had spent a lot of time with him when he first arrived at Sydney. But he's a different player. He's a contested ball-winning player and not a super kick. Great with his hands. You know, really creative. Brings players into the game. And Yeager Amira, probably it's hard to tell because he hasn't played for a couple of years. 3 years ago, you would have said, look, good skill level, speed. But I reckon he's lost a bit of that. That'll probably come back. So I reckon you've got two big bodies around the stoppage that you can create contested. They won contested ball, correct me if I'm wrong, last week, and they put enormous pressure on West Coast Eagles. They won that game.
Yeah,
they have to reconstruct their game plan before they worry too much about personnel.
What do you think there'd be any value in having some selection scalps? You know, the form of Gibson, sort of Puopolo, Shields, Bruce, these guys are being questioned at the moment. What path would you go down?
Well, I think I agree with Ruzzi. It's very clear now that the loss of Mitchell and Lewis has not only hurt them with regards to decision-making, but they're elite disposers of the football. A lot more pressure goes on to a Luke Hodge and perhaps one or two other players. I think what it clearly says, and history's a great teacher in this regard, there are some premiership-winning players at Hawthorn that played yesterday and that have played every game almost this year that are good players, but they're not good enough to step up now and assume the responsibility of those other players that have vocated it. So without wanting to be overcritical, those players have been spoilt with the luxury on riding on the coattails of so many great, wonderful players for a long period of time.
Just playing a role.
Playing a role, and they played a really important role because they had so many great players around them. But now some of those great players are either starting to taper off really quickly, or two players in particular have now gone on, and that's the conundrum that Clarko's got to make.
And I don't think that's disrespectful, Swatter, to those players, because every there's this myth that exists that every premiership player is a superstar. You need levels within your – you guys played in premiership. You need levels in your team of players that play roles. Then you've got your probably mid-tier type players that are a little bit better than role players. Then you've got your superstars. As soon as your superstars leave, it makes it a lot harder for those others. So it's not disrespectful at all to some of those Hawthorn players. It's just the reality of how you construct the premiership team. And when some of your superstars leave – it's a lot harder for those players.
Let's hear from Luke Hodge on game day this morning, courtesy of
Charles. Losses to that extent just doesn't cut at AFL level. And Clarko's right. If we can't I guess, put a better effort on the field, we're going to have to make quite a few changes.
There'll be a level of loyalty that Clark, I'm assuming that all coaches show a great deal of loyalty to players that have been so good for so long, Roosie, but at what stage do you make wholesale changes, or is it just a gradual thing where you, I'll sacrifice a lamb today to fire a shot across the bow to shake the cage a bit?
Yeah, look, I think there's a couple of examples of that, Swat, I reckon. I think Ross Lyon showed some real faith in his players for the first couple of weeks and then said, look, I reckon you have to. I reckon as a coach, you owe it to those players to give them an opportunity. And then at some point, you bring in young players. I think we saw here yesterday with Carlton, they had too many young players playing last week against Port. Very difficult to go over to Adelaide with a young group, play against Port. They brought in some experienced players yesterday. Silvani, I thought, was terrific. So it's always around balance and what you think your team's going to look like. But I suspect, yeah, there's going to be a lot of discussions at Hawthorn this week, and the biggest thing will be around, you know, some of those names and how long you give them. And Clarko will be, you know, very, very respectful to those players.
He's certainly not scared, though, to make the tough decisions. No. I mean, the decisions that he made on Mitchell and Lawson itself tells you, Swatter, that there will be no shying away from any tough stuff.
How are you? Been a long-time Hawthorn fan. What did you think watching yesterday?
As a fan? Mm. I think you look at it as a Hawthorn fan, I'm not sure. You read a little bit of discontent and you read about Hawthorn supporters getting unhappy. If you'd said to me 10 years ago, you're going to win 4 premierships in the next 10 years and after that you'll finish bottom for 5 straight years, take it every day of the week, as I reckon every supporter in the competition would. Yep. That's the way the competition's structured, isn't it?
The issue is there's a big cliff because...
It surprised me. It surprised me how quickly the drop has been, but I think we're all surprised by that. Sydney were 2 kicks away from winning the premiership last year and they're 0-6. So is that the competition's evenness or what is it, Roosie?
Oh, there's no doubt. I think the competition, as Duck said before, is definitely evened up. We went through that 5 years of expansion teams, the Suns and the Giants, all the good kids going to those teams. So if that was the worst period of time you could be on the bottom of the ladder. There's no question about
that. And the best time to be on top of the
ladder. And the best time to be on top of the ladder. And with all due respect, Hawthorn took advantage of that. Sydney took advantage of that. Did some really good, trading with older players, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I think there is a clear difference between the Swans and the Hawks. That's probably. Yeah. The Swans, Duck, have got Callum Mills, who was probably pick 1, 2, or 3. Have got Isaac Heaney that are pick. Yeah, you've got Papley, you've got Malcolm, you've got Rose, et cetera. So they've got a Haywood who's been a really good kid. So they've got a really good group of young kids.
They have. You're exactly right. But if you look at the competition now, Howie. We talk about how close it is. I think it is really close from 4 or 5 down. From 5 down, really close. But I think there's a real separation now between GWS, Bulldogs, Adelaide and...
Do you have Port in there?
Geelong?
No, Geelong.
Geelong.
They're the 4. I think there's a real separation at the moment. And the 2 that played on Friday night, Roosie, if you look at the depth that they both have, they have an enormous amount of depth. If you looked at the players that were out on Friday night, so they've almost separated themselves. And the demographic of the age of their groups as well, they're going to be... We talk about rivalry. I know we'll probably talk about them later, but... Just in the context of this conversation and where squads are at, they are just unbelievably right at the top, aren't they? The Bulldogs and GWS. They sit comfortably. Yeah. And the reason why I don't have Adelaide right there, and I know they're on the top of the ladder right now, because I think their depth through the middle of the ground isn't as deep. So if they got 2 or 3 injuries through there, they might struggle. Whereas the Bulldogs and GWS, you just look at them and they've just got another bloke that can come in.
And I think what you said as a supporter, I think is really relevant. If you're a Hawthorn supporter and a Swans supporter, you can't be too disappointed.
No.
I mean, really, they've both had terrific runs, premierships, consistent finals appearances. And at some point, I think as a competition... We don't want them to continue to be successful. Yeah. It's hard.
I don't know, Roosie. Yeah. I was looking at 6 in a row there at one stage. Just before we wrap this discussion up, Alistair Clarkson, it was an interesting press conference yesterday. How's he going to deal with this whole situation, Clarkie, from a journalist's point of view?
Well, there's been some discussion about whether he's still the right fit for the Hawthorn Football Club. If it was me, I wouldn't want anyone else in charge of this stormy sea at the moment, because we've seen just how clever he is and how quickly he is to reinvigorate, re-energise his football team. But I'll tell you what, if I was any club... with a vacancy in the senior coaching position at the end of the year, whether it be Collingwood, whether it be North Melbourne, whether it be Gold Coast or whatever, he'd, along with Johnny Longmire, he'd be the absolute first bloke I'd call.
But how this gets back to that question that we talk about in the draft and how it evens things up. Clarko did. He came to that club when they were down near the bottom. They clearly gone to the top. We know that. We know what they've done. Off the back of those high draft picks, Buddy Franklin, Roughhead, etc., Hodge, etc., Lewis, etc., they don't have that now.
That's true. Yep.
They don't have that
now. And that's
what
leaves them
in
that deep
hole. It's got to be done completely.
The Saints banner yesterday, our Jacks will be nimble, our Jacks will be quick. A Saint say thanks to the Hawks.
How good's that?
For your first round
They're
pick.
Very clever, some of the banners. Yeah.
And that was the O'Meara trade. So otherwise they would have a top three pick at the end of the season potentially, but that's sitting in the Saints' back pocket. And that's why the discussion about Jagger O'Meara is so intense and so interesting, because they parked a lot of their future on getting
this
bloke.
And the Saints win yesterday pushed the Hawks even further down and improved their draft.
Talking of banners, I thought the Bulldogs won on Friday night in Canberra was quite good.
What was that all about?
Finally, something to do on a Friday night in Canberra.
Coming from behind through the hands of a Collingwood player, Murphy on the spot kicks a goal.
Campbell Murphy, something miraculous. Murphy! Unbelievable!
Unbelievable player and unbelievable commentator. Wayne Schwartz doing some fine work there. The Blues 15-17, too good for the Swans 97 to the Swans 11-12-78. It was a 8-point lead to the Sydney Swans at half time. So a fantastic win by the Blues. And Mark Murphy is on the line now. G'day, Murph.
G'day, Howie.
Oh, wonderful to speak to you on this magnificent Sunday morning. I'm sure you've woken up with a smile on your face, mate. 8 points down at half-time against a side like Sydney. This would be one of the better wins for Carlton in the last four or five seasons, I would have thought. Congratulations, mate. Well played by you and your side.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for that, Howie. It's certainly better turning up on a Sunday afternoon after having a good win the day before. So, we played pretty poor brand of footy last week, so the boys worked really hard throughout the week and had a really good win yesterday.
Murph, I thought selection was really important for you. I guess the difficulty that Brendan had, and I don't know how much as captain you have a say in selection, whether you go on the meetings, but I thought last week maybe just taking a too young a side over to Adelaide to play Port, big body team. I thought what you did really well yesterday was bring in some more mature players, and certainly Silvani had a fantastic game on Buddy Franklin.
Yeah, you're right. It's a fine balance between getting some youth into the side and having too many young guys. But the guys who came in last week, they earned their spot to play, but we probably were probably a little bit too young and we probably had too small bodies. So I think having some senior guys coming into the side this week really helped us out. We obviously still had a lot of young guys still playing yesterday, but you mentioned Alex Silvani. He was unbelievable yesterday on Big Buddy. I think obviously Buddy's one of the best players in the comp, and the way Alex played, he really steeled himself for a big contest and won a lot of one-on-one battles against him.
Murph, how hard is it? You're reasonably young in terms of your captaincy. How hard is it when you come off a hiding like you did last week to, I guess, remain positive during the week with your younger teammates, but at the same time, you're under pressure to perform yourself. So, yes, you've got to get over and encourage the youngsters and tell them to keep their heads up, but at the same time, got to worry about running around getting the ball yourself. How hard is that as a current-day captain?
Yeah, you're right. It's really difficult sometimes when you do have a lot of young kids. But we looked at the game in depth last week. We actually played some pretty good footy in the first half. We just didn't capitalise on the scoreboard. And I suppose in the third quarter, they got some early scores on the board, and we probably too impacted on by the scoreboard with our mindset. And I think to the boys' credit, we addressed that this week and had some good conversations about how to react going forward and how not to be just so reactive. I think we were probably too reactive last week, and the young guys are really terrific throughout the week. They certainly do get the older guys up in terms of their spirit and their energy around the footy club, and we'd actually been playing some pretty good footy up until that point last week. So we just went back to basics this week and just encouraged the boys to play with their strengths. And it's really important for our leaders to set that example. And we spoke about it at halftime at halftime yesterday, but third quarters have been probably a little bit disappointing this year. So we really wanted to make a stand early in that third, and we did that, which was good to see.
Hey, Murph, it's obviously important to get draft selections right as often as possible, but it's also really important to identify players from other clubs that you can get there that can have an immediate impact. And since Sam Doherty's arrived at your footy club, he's been a wonderful player, reigning best and fairest, 39 touches yesterday. He's been a great acquisition to a young, developing Blues outfit.
Oh, he's been terrific, Sam. He's you sometimes forget he's only still 23. And he's, as you said, a reigning best and fairest winner, a leader already around the footy club. So having guys like that come from other footy clubs, obviously you've got to get your drafting right. But having guys like that and obviously Matthew Wright as well, being a bit of a senior player coming across from Adelaide, he's played his role on the side. But, yeah, it's really important to get some of those younger guys from other footy clubs like Caleb Marchbank and Lockie Plowman that we've been able to trade for as well. So it certainly helps.
A lot of excitement about the Blues. Blues fans, you need to jump on board, be bound by Blue this year and sign up as a member in 2017. Starting from as little as only $60. Become a Blues member today. Visit carltonfc.com.au for more information. Paul Roos is speaking to the captain of Carlton on the Sunday Rub, Mark Murphy.
Murph, just following from Swatter's comment about Doherty, I thought the combination of Doherty and Simpson was unbelievable yesterday. I reckon what they do incredibly well is protect you guys on turnover. They're always the first one back inside your defensive 50. And the number of times a Swans player looked up, you know, after a turnover was created and looked up and saw Simpson, saw Doherty, their organisational skills, and I think I came here the day you guys beat Essendon as well, and I thought they were exactly the same there. Their organisational skills down back are outstanding.
Yeah, they're really important players for us, the way they do set up your spot on. They're both very smart footballers and they set up really well. So we rely on really heavy pressure coming from our midfield, and if we can put pressure on their middies, kicking it into their 450 and having guys like Dockers and Simo setting up our other defenders as well, it's certainly great having those guys down there.
Mark, Duck touched on your leadership earlier and I thought it's been magnificent this season. How are you going as a mate and a leader of Dale Thomas at the moment? Because he's in the VFL and was once one of the absolute best players in the competition. Johnny Bark, your assistant coach yesterday, said a lot of the discussion about his future, trigger clause, etc., is affecting his psyche, his mentality. How are you going with him as a mate and a captain?
Oh, look, I'm offering plenty of support to him. He's one of my good mates. I'm on the way out now to go watch him play out at Coburg. So he's the one thing about Dave, he's a real team man and real selfless, and he's been working really hard in his game. It just hasn't been quite clicking for him. So hopefully he can go back today and work hard in his game and play some good footy for us and put his name back up for selection. But, yeah, there's obviously been a lot of talk about Daisy over the years, and he's had a few struggles with his body, but hopefully he can get a good run and try and string some good performances together and work his way back into the side.
Is he in your best 22, do you think? I mean, there's some impressive young talent coming through.
Yeah, we do have a lot of good young talent. I think he certainly is. He's certainly a wise head. He sees the game really well. He's really good at directing players around him. He's been playing a role for us up forward. It's a pretty tough role, a half forward flanker in modern day football. You're required to work really hard, and you don't sometimes get on the end of a few. It is a tough spot, but he's, as I said before, he's a real selfish player. Hopefully he can turn for him and can see him back out there pretty soon.
Hey, Murph, another thing that I think has really improved, and I must admit, I didn't think there'd be that much improvement, but Levi Casbolt has kicked 11 goals, 4 from his 6 games this year. Obviously the work that he's doing with Sav Rocker is really starting to pay dividends, and that's good for a big man.
Yeah, it is. Just the way he attacked the footy yesterday, just clocking big marks. It's obviously a big strength in his game, but yeah, as you said, kicking 11 goals 4 so far has been really good for us. And yeah, he gets on really well with big Sav, and he's straightening him up a fair bit, which is good. So it always helps when you've got your big blokes down forward taking big grabs. And I suppose Cruz was another one yesterday. He went down forward for us and took a few good grabs and kicked those goals. They're always really important when big blokes can go down forward and do that for you.
Murph, I thought there was a really critical stage during the third quarter from memory when Brandon Jack looked like he was going to run into an open goal and Silvani, a little bit of a fumble, and then Silvani made the tackle. It was a two-goal swing. Did you sense that? Is that something, as a player, you can sense the momentum shift with when a really big play like that happens?
Yeah, I think there was a few. I think Alex was a part of a few of them, just the big one-on-one contests, and you certainly do you do sense that out in the ground, and I think we were able to go up there and score straight after that. And as you said, two-goal turnarounds are big in games these days. And just wrestling back momentum of the game is really important in modern-day footy. And those one-on-one acts are certainly something to get, you know, your teammates going. And, you know, Alex had, I reckon, probably 10 of them yesterday. So, yeah, he was fantastic.
Murph, just as we let you go, you said you're off to the VFL. Now, how professional do we need to be down there? People have been to the pies and the sausage rolls down there. They'll waft under your nose. Do you get stuck into that, or you just sort of pack your quinoa salad and away you go?
No, not the quinoa salad, but we're actually at a clinic this morning and snuck in a few little cocktail frankfurts, so that was all right. But try and recover as best we can today and watch the boys hopefully get a good win. Savo.
All right, go easy on the hot dogs, Murph. We appreciate your time, and again, congratulations to you and your club yesterday beating the Swans.
Cheers. Thanks, boys.
Howie, just on those moments that you're talking about there, Roosy, those big moments, I don't know how many people were here yesterday. What was it?
25 or 26.
Nearly 30,000. Yeah. I reckon as one, when Alex Silvani beat Buddy, and it's because it's Buddy as well. If it was any other player, you probably don't get the roar. But the fact that it was Buddy Franklin in one-on-one contests, they went up as one. Mm. I mean, you looked around the stands and they were all applauding as one for Alex Silvani, who's, you know, hasn't played a lot of footy for their footy club. It was quite incredible.
Side note, I think Collingwood had the choice between Lyndon Dunn and Alex Silvani and went for Dunn, and then Carlton got Silvani at the end of last year. Roosie, what about Sydney? Before we go to the break, the thing for me, the surprise has been the form of the senior players. The guys have been so reliable for a long time.
Yep.
Hannabury, Parker, Jack, etc. What's been your take on these guys? Are you clear on why they've been so down this season?
Yeah, look, obviously, you think a lot about it from a technical point of view, coaching point of view, because we're all surprised that they're 0-6. I think with the Swans, there's a number of things. When there is a bit of a tipping point when young players come in, and it puts even more pressure, Duck, you mentioned before, to Murphy as a captain, it almost puts more pressure on those senior players because they have spent a lot of time in the midfield, that group. Like when I'm talking over the last 4 or 5 or 6 years, they have played a lot of extra games when you're playing finals, you know. So there's a wear and tear factor also. I don't think Luke Parker had a pre-season from memory. Kieran Jack hurt his hip.
He's been injured.
Kieran Jack hurt his hip. So when you look into it, and it'll be interesting to talk to Johnny Longmire later on about those sort of things. So you're actually trying to look for reasons why. They had a lot of players that missed pre-seasons, and they've got a lot of young players, and there is, I reckon, a tipping point. Look, are we all surprised they're 0-6? Absolutely. Should they have won yesterday? Yeah, we all tipped them. But I think if you delve down, there are some reasons behind it.
If you look at effort, and there were a couple of times yesterday at crucial stages in that third term, and I think also in the last term, where Parker started forward and they put Heaney in that into the middle. It's a different look in the middle. Kennedy's generally your mainstay in there. But Parker, who, you know, hasn't been at his best, and I'm sure Long as well, you know, as we said, had sort of no real pre-season, but the way you could just see his effort, but he doesn't look like, and BT likes to use the word cement legs, just doesn't look as like he's running on top of the ground. He doesn't look like dynamic. He's got real spring in his legs. He looks heavy. He's not heavy.
Yeah, no, he does.
But he just looks heavy. Looks like he's running through the ground. And that's how a couple of those players are looking at them right now. And I'm sure Longers will be able to sort of tell us a little bit more about that.
I think the other thing is, Duck, that happens is if you've got a full list to pick from, and I've done this before as a coach, you can tend to leave a Parker out for a couple of weeks. You can actually play them in the NAFL. You can play them in the seconds. But when you're skinny anyway, and I reckon Alier suffered from that. You're like, I think he might have only had one game coming back. He'd been out for about 12 weeks. Mm. Now, if you've got a full list to pick from, Alier probably plays 2, 3, 4 games in the seconds before you bring him. So I reckon there's a number of factors that have contributed. He comes in the team and gets dropped because he's just not ready to play.
And also in the background, the Lance Franklin issue is again bubbling away. This is a guy's on $1.2, $1.3, $1.4 million over the next 3 or 4 years, and it does compromise the depth on their list.
Absolutely. Yep.
So while he's an absolutely brilliant player, and I don't think anyone questions the recruitment of him, they do have to counter with the depth on the list because they can't afford to play.
Tippett? How's Tippett going?
Well, he's the other guy. So that's $2 million on two players, and now they're in a situation where Sam Reed is asking for good money because he's a talented, tall player, say $500,000 or $600,000. The Swans can't afford to have three players take up $2.6 million. Their salary cap, that's why Collingwood, that's why Richmond, that's why Melbourne are circling this man.
Gather round, boys and girls. It's story time with Roosie.
Now, Clarky, before we get to this story, I'm a little bit concerned because this segment is going extremely well, I think. It's one of our better segments on the Sunday Rub. I've heard rumour of a possible publication involving someone heavily involved in this segment, and maybe they're trying to start thinking about holding over their best stories for a publication later in the year.
Is that right? Yeah. Rosie, is this your priority with us, or are you sort of saving it for another book or something?
What I'm saying, I'm trying to spread them out over the year. I've got a book coming out at the end of the year, so we'll build it to a crescendo, as you do at story time. You don't... It's like round the fire. You're not going to give your first one out, duck.
Well, what's the book about, Rosie? What's it? Is it?
It's called Rosie's Story Time.
Yeah, Rosie, see, that's not a bad book. No, about leadership and all the stuff at Melbourne and Sydney and putting it... It's enjoyable because you don't, as you guys know, you don't often sort of reflect on your career until someone says, oh, look, can you...
So it will be your playing career?
No, mainly around coaching.
Mainly around coaching.
Okay. Yeah, coaching and leadership and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
So there's 15 stories we're no longer allowed to ask
about. I've written them down.
I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, today we're talking about transitioning from Sydney and leaving there and why, and then moving to the Melbourne Football Club. And this is where we start Rosie's Story Time.
Yeah, look, I'll go the shorter version because, you know, it was a long process. As I said, when Peter Jackson first contacted me, it took a long time to get my head around. But just talking around the key, probably the key moments more than anything else. I think the first one was when, look, and Sydney looked after me incredibly well, and I coached the academy for 3 years, and I was incredibly well paid. So it had nothing to do with any sort of bitterness or anything like that. But Andrew and Ireland and I met. I had a 3-year contract with the academy, and I think they asked, it was like a 60-70% pay cut or something like that. So, look, and as I said, the relationship with the Swans is still very strong. Relationship with Andrew is good. But it was, for me, it was a sign, Rosie, move on. You know, we've loved having you. You need to go and find another job. So it's probably from that moment then you start to think about what are you actually going to do. After a number of discussions with Peter Jackson and some talk, I finally decided to meet with the leadership group, the Melbourne leadership group, and I made sure Neil Craig was the interim coach, and I made sure through Peter Jackson that Neil was okay with me meeting them. I didn't want to disrupt their preparation, their year, anything like that.
Did you have to keep it quiet at this stage?
Yeah, pretty much.
To the Melbourne media. So
yeah,
how do you go about getting a little meeting with a member of a leadership group and a much talked about former coach?
Yeah, we met at my accountant's place just in South
JC.
Melbourne. So they had a big board meeting, boardroom there. So look, it was a really good cross section of guys. From Shannon Burns, who'd been at a successful footy club in Geelong, Mitch Clark, Lyndon Dunn, and then you had the two captains, Grimesy and Trenners, Nathan Jones. Jack Watts, etc. So I tried to get a really good cross-section of guys. And I really liked their honesty. And part of, I think the first thing I probably said is, guys, look, I just want to know reasons why. And I don't think, I'm not going to walk out here thinking, gee, they're not taking responsibility. There's excuses, etc. So I just really wanted to know, why they felt the club hadn't been successful, whether I could help them. And there was probably a number of key moments. I think Shannon Burns was pretty key in it, because I think, with all due respect to a lot of the Melbourne guys in the room, they probably didn't know what success looked like. And Burnsy was really good at explaining the difference between Geelong and Melbourne. And for me, Geelong was so much more like Sydney, and I felt, what Burnsy saw at Geelong was very much what we tried to do at Melbourne. Hence, you sort of go out of the meeting thinking, okay, well, if we can implement, some of the things that he would have learned at Geelong and we did at Sydney, then you're probably going to start to generate. I think
did you get a sense, Rosie, on how desperate, how bad it was, how out of devoid of confidence these guys were?
Oh, look, one of the players made a comment to me, we just want to be treated like human beings. And that was a really, really...
stark comment, yeah.
Yeah, really big comment. And when I heard that, to the guys' credit, I walked out of there thinking, no, this is a group that wants to take responsibility. And they took some responsibility themselves. They didn't just blame everyone else, and it wasn't like that. They were actually we could have done better, and we felt maybe, we let the coach down so they were clear in, but some of the comments. And then when I got home and over the next 24 hours, I got some text messages from those players. Nathan Jones sent me a text message. Jack Trengove sent me a text message. Jack Grimes sent me a text message. I think Watts, he did as well. And probably my son, Dylan, made a, I read the text messages out to my wife, Tammy, and the boys, and Dylan said, Dad, you have to go and coach this team.
Is that right?
And I said, well, why? He goes, well, you're good at it, and you have to go and do it. You have to help them. And that was, I'm probably one that reads the tea leaves a bit, and you try and, everyone tries to go through life, when if you run into someone, you go, now, why did I run into someone? So I'm always one that sort of reacts to certain things. It's almost like a roadmap to your life. And if you can read the signpost. So that was a significant moment when he sort of said that to me.
So you're getting ready. You've signed up. You decide to join up. You're all geared up. You're pumped up. You go down to the first training session to see some elite AFL performers in action. How do they compare to the Swans? Roosey rolls up on day one. What did you see?
Yeah, look, now the only reason I'm going to tell this story is because Maxie Gorn's already spoken about it. So I would not normally, because they're the Melbourne players, so Maxie Gorn's already let the cat out of the bag with this one. So Maxie, I'm only going to tell it because, and this was first training session. So, what I did, assembled some really good talent around me with the coaches, all Sydney guys, Benny Matthews, Brett Allison, Georgie Stone, Daniel McPherson, Jade Rawlings was there, terrific. So first training session, we had a lot of off-season injury, so there was about 12 blokes training, Duck, so it was pretty hard to put too many drills together. So I said to Georgie, Georgie's the wise old sage, so, mate, what are we going to do? He goes, well, just, mate, you got to do some lane work. So I said, all right, well, that's, it's pretty basic. We might start with some lane work. And honestly, it was the first kick, the first drill. We've done the warm-up, about 12 players training, everyone else is in rehab, and I'm standing there, Georgie's not, I've got the whistle, got the hat on, trying to look like I know what I'm doing again. And I think it was Rowan Bales come out from the lane work, kicked at the Jackie Fitzpatrick. First training session, first kick. Jack's put the mitts out. I think he forgot to put the thumbs, from the old school clinic, when they're told to put the old thumb behind the W behind the ball.
Yep.
It's gone straight through and hit him on the nose. It's hit him flush on the nose, the best Falcon I've seen in 30 years of footy. I've looked over to Georgie Stone. Georgie's looked over at me and we're sort of shaking our heads, going, oh, well, can't get much worse from here. Anyways, picked it up. Why'd go on the left slipper? I don't know, but he's picked it up and tried to, you don't want to turn two mistakes into one.
Yes.
So I reckon he's tried to butter up. He's dropped it on the left slipper, and I seriously, it's nicked the leather, the outside leather, just, and it's rolled 5 metres sideways, and he's picked it up, gone. George has walked over to me and gone, Bruzy. He said, how bad must the players have been that got the flick?
Back to Collar Jazzy inside 50. Oh, big launch! Oh! What a grab down there, Menzel!
Got it to Davis. Hand pass cut off. Dangerfield's got it. Hand pass to Menzel. Runs to 25. Fires and puts it through.
Oh, we like this man because he brings excitement to the table. Danny Menzel joins us on the Sunday Rub in the Box. G'day, Menz. Great to see you.
Thanks, Howie. It's good to be here.
Rested. Just having a bit of a spell this week, which probably comes back to a little bit of last year, possibly playing a few too many on the trot, be fair to say?
Yeah, it is. I think when we reviewed last season, having not played many games in 4 years, I almost was like a first-year player and played about 20 games last year, and it was probably took a toll on me as the season went on, and I had a couple of injuries with that. So we just said we're going to be proactive this year rather than reactive, and it seems about right for today to have a rest.
Tell us a bit about that, because I think this weekend we've got about five or six players across the board that aren't playing, rested or managed. So tell us a bit about the mechanics that exist at a footy club in terms of wellness, and I know guys filling out forms and all those sorts of things, but a bit of it's around the gut feel, as you mentioned, particularly guys like yourself that have had an injury history.
Yeah, Roosie, it's one that we do so many tests, we fill out so many things throughout the week that just tells our fitness staff, our medical team, whether we actually feel good, whether we've pulled up well from the game, all these sort of things. And obviously every single day too, if you've got some sort of injury, you've got to go in. We've got half an hour of medical assessment. So it's one where I think clubs will be more proactive in the future. The game's not getting any easier. And I think in my case, it's one where I've worked with the medical team for so long now that we know each other pretty well, and we've gone, all right, let's be smart with this. Let's not play every single game. That's probably not realistic. Or if we do, we won't be at that level that we want to. So for me this week, I'll probably put up a little bit sorer after the last weekend than I have the other games. But in saying that, it's nice to actually know that I could play today if I needed to.
How much confidence have you got in your knees, given what you've been through? And what do you know about yourself now that perhaps you didn't know without having gone through the challenges you've overcome, Mintz?
Yeah, I think, this year I've got so much more confidence than what I had last year, and it obviously builds each year. But last year I think I really struggled to train and play every single week. I'd play and then I'd some weeks I wouldn't train throughout the week just because I'd struggle to get up for the game. And it's one that I was like, obviously I don't want this to happen for the rest of my career because it's going to be a real battle. And it's amazing how much of a difference I've felt this year, that extra year after the knee. And anyone who does an ACL, they usually say it takes until your second year to come back and feel pretty good. And for me, it's more than obviously one. But this year, I actually feel like I'm training each week and I'm playing on the weekend and I feel good to go. So it's one that it gives me so much confidence. And I feel like last year, I'd go into games and just be thinking, yeah, hopefully I can get through this, all right? Whereas I don't actually think that now. So that's helped so much. I think in terms of obviously going through my knees to now, I mean, I'm just so much more aware of my body. I'm so much more aware of my mental state, I guess, as well. My goal kicking's probably been a good example of that, that has helped, because I think mentally I've been on top of that, whereas I probably, when I was a 19-year-old kid, would have had no idea and just gone, oh, just kick the ball and see what happens. So,
is it worth it, or was it worth it, given that, you, like you said, you've played 20 games last year and now you've played, you know, 5 or 6 this year? Clearly the fact that your footy team wins most weeks, so therefore you're on and up. But when you think back and think all of that rehab, 4 of them, Roosie, shoulder reconstruction, it's the loneliest time ever. And I know we've spoken to you over the years when you were going through that. But when you think of the joy after a game now, and you've probably had about 20 wins in that time, was it and is it worth it?
Yeah, absolutely, Duck. It is. It's one that the way I describe it is, I remember sitting in the grandstand watching our team play for 4 years straight, always thinking, I wonder if I could be out there one day, and I wish I was. And the way I describe it is, people always said to me, did you ever feel like giving up or think about giving up? And I always thought, if I gave up in 5 years' time, would I be able to sit at home on the couch and watch the Cats play and go, I maybe if I kept going, I could be out there and I could have done it. And so that didn't sit well with me. And so I thought, you know what, I'm just going to keep going because it will be worth it when I get back. And if not, for the rest of my life, I'll always think, well, maybe I could have actually got back there.
Menz, the self-belief you had during that period was something that really blew me away. I remember you trying to come back from maybe your third one and you said, oh, you know, if I can get up by round 18, we might play finals, you know, I could go and win a premiership. And I remember walking away thinking, is this bloke kidding himself? But you never, and I don't say that disrespectfully, you never seem to waver. So where did you get that self-belief when so many people had probably lost belief in you?
Yeah, it's a tough one, Howie. I think it's so important your network around you to obviously instill that in you as well. And the footy club's been so good to me that every time I did my ACL, within the first week, Scotty in the footy club said, we're going to stick by you. You're going to be here next year. And it's amazing that takes that away from your mindset straight away. And you don't have to think about, well, geez, I might be playing local footy back home next year. And that makes a big difference. But then obviously having those people around you too that believe in you as well, it's going to be difficult if there's everyone saying you're not going to make it back. But then if the people closest to you are actually saying maybe it's time to throw it in, then that's when it gets really difficult. And Mum was always one that was great with me where she said, if you want to do it, then do it because I know that you'll be able to. And that certainly helps. But at the same time too, I mean, I missed out on the premiership in 2011 by 3 weeks when I did my first knee. And that has been a huge driving factor for me as well. And it actually probably got a little bit too far where, for me, it was coming back to play in the premiership the next season. And yep. So when I do my next ACL, I would break down as much of the fact that I've done my knee and I'm out for another 12 months, but I actually can't play in the grand final this year. So it's been a massive driving factor that mentally I've learned a lot about. But, yeah, I just hope that one day I'll get that chance out here.
One of the moments I'll never forget in footy, Menz, was the end of 2015. I think it was your first game back, late season game against Collingwood, from memory, maybe at the G. And one of your very early touches, you got it from about 50 and kicked this magnificent goal, you know, and that this was very much your comeback story. I got chills in the box, I got goosebumps, hair stood up in the end, blokes from Geelong were thumping the desk, and it was this really magical moment. Did it feel like that for you? You know, you'd gone through hell, and then you just kicked this unbelievable goal, one of your first touches. How did it feel for you at that point?
Yeah, it was.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do, Clark. It was unreal. Look, I mean, for 1,450 days, I did think about that day every single day, and did think about what would happen, and so. It's funny, people always say, I didn't actually see that happening. I couldn't have predicted that. Whereas I'd had 1,450 different visions in my head go through what the game would be like. So it was something that drove me every day. And so it actually was such a surreal feeling that it actually was happening. And so after the game, I remember thinking, today's the day I've looked forward to for so long. And it's hard to actually get it all to set in. But it was a really weird day because we needed to win to make finals that game against the Pies. and they beat us by about 40 points. So we were pretty down and flat in the rooms. And I remember after the game, I was too, because I wanted to play finals and I wanted to win a grand final. But it wasn't until my family and friends came in and it was like I'd won a grand final the way they came in. And that's when
pretty
it
emotional.
Sort of hit me. Yeah, it was. And Youngie, my physio, has been unreal, and he's so good, and he's got me through this as well. Come up to me after the game, I was pretty upset, and he said, "Mate, I know you're pretty flat right now, but you've got to take a moment to realise what we've just achieved." And that sort of hit me as well, and that's going to stick with me forever as well.
We're talking to Daniel Menzel from the Cats, who has been rested today because just needs to give the body a little bit of a rest, boys. I want to get on to the footy now and how the Cats are travelling. I reckon the big difference between this year, and we speak about your two superstars, your captain Joel Selwood, who was just unbelievable, been unbelievable since day one. You got Paddy Dangerfield, but the evenness, I reckon there's more of a lift from that middle crew, and I guess you're one of those. You know, as you said, 20 games back in, your footy's more consistent now, but the Duncans and these guys really starting to step up. And okay, Joel was brilliant last week, and I reckon Paddy's had some brilliant games as well, but you're starting to see those names that we expected to see in the best players, and that's what I think is the big step that the Cats have taken, and I know it's only round five.
Yeah, 100%, Duck. I agree with that. I think as a coaching group, it's a credit to them. They identified at the end of last year that we needed our middle tier to have more of an impact on games, and they went about playing more to those guys' individual strengths. So I think Mitch Duncan's got more inside this year. He's able to get his hands on the footy. I think Stephen Motlop's got more around the ball, but still on the outside where he's able to be creative and run with the footy. Other guys as well throughout the team, there's a number of them that I think we're actually playing to their strengths. We've got Blitzavs at times on the wing, who's an incredible runner. So I think it's one that, we obviously have relied on those two guys, but they've gone, all right, how can we get these other guys in the game? And they've been terrific for us this year in the midfield. And it's nice. We're working well as a forward line too, which we've got so many guys in there that haven't played together. And I mean, Harry Taylor's a good example of that. But it is. I think we're going, all right, let's play to guys' strengths more often and try not to rely on too few.
That's a good point with Harry Taylor. And there's been much talked about Harry playing forward. The fact that he's been able to isolate, you talk about playing to one strength. A lot of talk always about Tom Hawkins, and at times, if he didn't play well, the Cats struggled to win games as well, but you're able to get him one out. And I think Harry Taylor's played a big part in that, because he does draw his opponent out, doesn't run to stupid spots, doesn't allow his opponent to sag off, and that's a massive part when you're involved within a team in that forward line.
That's a great point, Duck. It's actually, I'm glad you said that, because there's a lot of people that are saying Harry's not working, just taking him out of there. He's not been good for the team. But Harry's doing a lot of things that, like you said, Hawks got so many one-on-one contests this year that he didn't get last year. And that's because Harry's taking the second key defender. And it's the same with me too. I'm getting some good looks because Harry's opponent's not dropping off on him.
That's right.
Because he can't. And so it was great when Harry kicked his first last week. He's been working at it, and he deserves it as well. And so it's still going to be a work in progress. There's going to be times when I guarantee you the coaching staff will go, well, maybe we should put him down back. But he's definitely helping Hawk and myself and our other forwards up there. And you know with Harry too, he's not going to get outmarked. He might not mark everyone, and he might not kick goals every time, but at least the crumbers know, the ball's coming to the ground. So it'll be interesting to see today how he goes and who he gets, but I think he's certainly helping us up there.
Did you see the feathers just fluff out when Megan said that's a great point, Duck? The feathers just starting to flutter at the back there. The chest came out. I'd say he loves it, Dougie boy.
Look, hey, man,
the conditioning.
Got some real tosses in here.
The conditioning of the group is really good, but that's reflected in what you've been able to do in fourth quarters. Your fourth quarter dominations in five games so far has been phenomenal as a group.
Yeah, it has. It surprised us. I've spoken with Hawk a couple of times about it during the game and actually said, geez, how many goals have we kicked in this quarter? But and we're actually just standing there watching the ball go over our head. So it's a credit to our midfielders and our back line that are finishing off games so well. And I think you're probably seeing it too in games this year, that games are pretty tight early and it opens up as the game goes on. And I think that's something that we certainly are aware of, and we certainly say that, okay, now that the game's opened up a little bit, let's keep going, let's put the foot on the throat here. And it's nice to know that we go into each three-quarter time huddle going, okay, we know we're going to finish this game well, and it certainly helps with confidence.
Dan Menzel is with us in the box, and the other superstar in here amongst the big-name footballers is Jay Clark. Always got the biggest updates on the best stories. Jay-Z, got some breaking news out of Geelong.
Yeah, huge news for the Cats, and that is that senior coach Chris Scott has signed a two-year extension to stay at the club at the end of the 2019 season. So I think we all sort of expected this. There's been some terms worked out over the last month or so.
Did you know that, Menz, or not?
I knew it was pretty close to being done, but yep. I didn't know okay. about well,
you just ring Jay-Z, he'll tell you what's happening at your club.
Yeah. What's your reaction to that, Menz? I mean, he sort of changed his focus this year. Has he focused more on player relationships and just been worked more on that? Is that Mitch Duncan said something along those lines. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I think, one, it's a credit to him. I mean, his win-loss record is, I think people sort of forget about that a little bit. But he certainly has. He's probably been more individualised with different things. And as I touched on, the coaching group as a whole working on players' strengths and playing to them. And I think Scotty's really drove that as well. And he has been really transparent and open with us as well. And I think probably more so than previous years. And
more approachable?
Yeah, probably that as well. So I think it's showing in our games, but also there's probably more of a calmness through the coaching group too. They've obviously been together a few years now and they've worked out each other's strengths as well. And so for Scotty, I mean, that's great to see that he's got another couple of years and hopefully he can take us to another flag.
That's it, Jay-Z?
Absolutely no doubt. If he was left out of contract at the Geelong Football Club and there were clubs with senior coaching vacancies, they would have absolutely gone after him. So I think this is a smart move by the Cats to lock him up nice and early.
Means we really appreciate your time. In your times coming back, you spent a fair bit of time in the media, you did some nice work on K-Rock, you were doing some special comments, some interviewing, so I don't want you to hide away from this question. You've just faced some of the biggest names in the game, and Jay-Z and me, with some pretty interesting questioning. Whose work did you enjoy the most? And I want an answer, and I want a name, and I don't want to spread the load. I want you to give one name as who you thought was best in this box right now.
Well, look, I've already pumped up the bloke next to me, so I'll go with...
But that was duck.
Hang on. The answer is...
I'll go with Roosie.
Come on.
See, he knows. He's smart. He knows.
I like that, yeah. I've always said, I'd never met him before, but I've always said he looked like a good judge.
Good on you, Menz. We can't wait to see you playing footy again soon. Daniel Menzi, a superstar. He'll be back next week for the Cats.
He also knows Roosie might be coaching again. if ever, there might be a big contract somewhere else, and Roosie might be the man.
Yes.
The Sunday Rubs.
Oh, back to school.
Back to school quiz.
Yes, another edition of the quiz, which we must say, after the first couple of weeks, we really had to dumb it down, Schwatter, because some of these questions, far too hard. But we've gone simple today.
Really simple?
Really, really right, simple. The running total, Schwatter 2.
There we are.
Duck 1. Roosie 1. Jay-Z 1. Buzzers, please.
Swatter.
JJ.
Duck. Roosie.
A bit more enthusiastic. Can you test yours again? There we go. All right, maths. Here we go. First question. What number was Patrick Dangerfield at Adelaide?
Duck.
Yes, duck.
He was 32.
He was. One for the duck. What are you laughing about, Roosie?
I took him a while.
Where was your buzzer?
Well, you can't sort of. I reckon there's got to be some sort of ruling around just buzzing willy-nilly.
Hang on. I went 32. That was within the 3 seconds.
Have you always been this crazily competitive, Roosie? When we suggested this idea at the start, you were like, yeah. Well, first practice we had there in South Melbourne, you started punching blokes.
Well, I'm a stickler for the rules. Okay. And there are none.
No. Question number two. History. Who won the Norm Smith medal in 2013?
Duck.
Yes.
Luke Hodge.
Incorrect.
JJ.
Come on.
Boom.
Cyril.
Incorrect.
Oh, it's the other...
In his first year at the football club.
The other team.
Duck.
No, you can't.
You cannot re-enter.
Oh, pretty
last
easy.
Chance, Roosie or Schwatter.
No, he you're can't out. Go. No.
All right.
Brian Lake.
Oh, no one gets a point there.
Damn. Jeez.
Geography.
Thought you said these were easy.
Well,
you shouldn't have won one.
You are really, really unintelligent fellas right here. Geography. What is the nickname of SANFL club Norwood?
Duck. Cruisers. Red Legs.
Yes, Duck goes to two. He's very sharp on that. And look at him just sort of pumping himself up now. All right. Guess this player. We go to the 1999 grand final.
Puts them inside 50. Down towards...
Duck.
Who?
Ian Fairley.
Incorrect.
He was in time.
Hang on. No. We'll play it one more time. 99. Hang on. Stop it.
Take one off. He wasn't even in the game. Take one off him.
Recue it back to the 1999 grand final. You're out, Duck.
Puts them inside 50. Down towards...
Swatter.
Yes.
Duck.
yes. Four goals so far this season.
You have to take a point off. Seriously.
Roosie, that's not part of the rules.
I brought up a bloke that didn't even play. He retired 3 years prior to that.
Yeah. And it was you, Duck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, wowee.
All right, English. How many vowels? Come on, Duck. How many vowels in Dipier Domenico?
Duck, duck.
Oh, okay, Dipier Domenico.
There is four.
There is not four. There's more than that.
Roosie. Six.
There's more than that.
Swatter.
JJ.
Five.
Less, more than that.
Says more than that. More than six can't be five.
Seven.
Seven.
Yes. Sorry. Thank you, Swatter.
Hang on. We've got to stop this now. This quick. This is ridiculous. You can't have a guy sitting there that says more than six and he goes five.
I missed that.
It's not that intelligent.
You know when you watch one of those shows and you've got to pick the number higher or lower?
I was working it out.
It's not six and it's not four and they go three.
Just quietly, Jay-Z, next time me and Turpy rins from The Price is Right, I wouldn't be answering the phone if I was you. All right, Swatter 2, Duck 2, Roosie unhappy, and Jay-Z just made a clown of himself.
Yep.
Who this week said this?
We've got bigger problems than playing at the MCG.
Duck, Swatter, Swatter.
Duck, Duck.
That's Alistair Clarkson.
That is not.
JJ.
Adam Simpson. Bruce.
Swatter is correct on that.
I did. Go back to the... You're arguing everything today.
It's got to be a rebuzzer.
Yeah, it's got to be a rebuzzer. Exactly. Thank you, Duck.
Stop
Thank
talking
you.
Over each other, gentlemen.
It had to be a rebuzzer. It had to be a re...
Swatter, three. Duck, two.
Sorry, well, I
looked after my seven-year-old and my five-year-old this morning. It was saying easier.
No, hang on. I just think we need to go to management at Triple M and we need to write down a set of rules before we have this clinic, this thing again next week.
All right. Swatter, three. Duck, two.
I lost Roosie last week on that.
Exactly.
And Jay-Z yet to score. So we need Duck to equal Swatter to go to the extra round. History bonus round. How many? I don't know why it's a bonus round, but anyway. How many best and fairests did Chris Judd win at the Eagles?
Duck, Duck.
Duck, Duck.
Only two.
Correct.
Well done, Duck.
So, Duck three, Swatter three. Roosie, Jay-Z, take your headphones off. Go and have a long, hard think about yourself.
Fair enough.
All right.
You need to have a think about yourself.
Nearest to the pin. First in answers first. For the win, yesterday, Gary Ablett had how many disposals?
Swatter,
Swatter. Swatter.
43.
Duck, Duck.
44.
The answer is 45. Duck takes it.
Oh, we need a rebuzzer. We need rules.
Oh,
I need to rewrite the book on this stupid quiz.
Duck wins the quiz 4-3. Now overall, Swatter 2, Duck 2, Roosie 1, Jay-Z 1. The back-to-school quiz, taking radio by storm. Duck still very happy with his quiz win. Roosie, you're getting a fair bit of feedback and advice about your performance in the quiz on your phone.
Yeah, look, you guys don't understand. I mean, coaching Melbourne was easy compared to going on the quiz. The lack of family support that I have. Here it is. This is from my wife. Dylan said, deplorable display of football knowledge. This is my other son, Tyler. Let me just check again. You were pathetic on that quiz. I may have to go back to coaching just to lighten the pressure.
Talking about pressure, Jay-Z, massive game, obviously, for the Collingwood Footy Club today. There's been so much discussion this week about their coach and what's going on. I think, as he always has, Nathan Buckley has handled himself tremendously well in the face of a fair bit of fire. Big day today.
I think anyone who knows Nathan Buckley and the kind of bloke he is sort of cheers for him a bit because he's...
Absolutely.
You know,
a good point.
Yeah, he's... Personally, I mean, he's such a great bloke. But clearly there's an enormous amount of pressure on him, not only today off a five-day break after last week's loss, but then next week against Carlton. It's just an absolutely crucial fortnight for him. And as you've said, even going back to round two, I think, Roosie, we need to see some consistency in the style of football they want to play and their brand, and particularly in the forward half of the ground, because as you guys would know a lot better than I, Mason Cox and Darcy Moore last week were largely ineffective. And in terms of their ball use, they kept going along the boundary line or were pushed wide, weren't they? So I think today, Roosie, we need to see from them, A, intensity, and B, some better ball use, because otherwise the confidence is going to go through the trapdoor even more.
Yeah, look, it's about your brand. I think the other thing that where it becomes a little bit different, and we're seeing it again over the weekend. I mean, the game can be completely different if you kick goals instead of points, not only from clearly a scoreboard point of view because your numbers go up quicker, but also the psychological
you know, when you miss a goal as opposed to you kick a goal. So I really want to see them today kicking goals rather than points. And then I think we'll get a clearer picture as to what Nathan's trying to do. I wouldn't underestimate that the confidence, how he went, it drops. And we've already seen it across the board in the first 5 or 6 weeks. Teams are simply getting beaten on that one factor and one factor alone when they're dominating games.
I concur with everything you said about Bucks. I've felt some real empathy for him over the last couple of weeks. And then you pick up the paper this morning and you read in there, you know, a little bit behind, because from afar, and I only got to know Bucks in 1998 when we travelled to Ireland together. I got to know him a little bit then. But to hear him say that, you know, when he got added to the team of the century for Collingwood after only 4 years being at Collingwood and then being given the captaincy when Gavin Brown had it really quickly in his tenure while he was there, and says that he believes that that was a mistake. To hear those things, which I've never heard before, it sort of does. It even makes you feel more empathy for him now as a senior coach. But I guess, Rusie, and you can answer this obviously better than all of us, and that is you've got to understand that when you go into coaching, that's just part and parcel of it. And if you're not prepared for what's going to come your way at some point in time, and let's be honest, as decorated as Rusie is, you know, there were people at Melbourne halfway through his Melbourne tenure saying, oh, well, is this right or is this wrong? And, you know, so... It's a difficult, difficult job to take on. And those that do it, you know, I applaud them, because there's plenty of us ex-player swatter that wouldn't even contemplate it for all of those very reasons. And that's why you don't contemplate it, because it is probably the most high-pressure job you can just about have in any sport.
All right. For the first time this afternoon, we introduce the superstar from the boundary who's got a very special guest, Mickey Roberts. G'day, Robbo.
G'day, Howie. I've got Brenton Sanderson, Sando, assistant coach at Collingwood. Beautiful day here at the MCG. Breathless down here, but look, we can just run through it. The coach is under the pump. The president's been forced to support. You've had a 5-day break. Scott Pendlebury has admitted playing his worst game in 10 years last week. The forward line's butchering the ball. You can't convert. How many more things can I have to say, Stan? Surely.
Soften him up, Robbo.
Surely there's some motivation today.
You're right, Robbo. It hasn't been pretty.
Just whack him, Sam. Just belt him one.
No, there's been some ugly signs for us in patches, but in all those games, we've been in front at some point, and I know that's not much to clutch onto, but we've played some good footy at times. But you're right about us with our ball use. Our ball use has been poor at critical moments, and we've been losing, you know, too many one-on-one contests around the ground. And we know Collingwood at their best, and we saw that up in Sydney. You know, 100 plus tackles and pressure, and that's been in Collingwood's DNA for, you know, 125 years. And we're going to have to be at our best today to beat Geelong. We know how well they're playing. We know how well they play, how well they finish off games. I would never mention it if the players could hear me, Robbo, but yeah, a 5-day break's not ideal coming up against this team, but there's plenty of spirit still. There's plenty of belief with this young squad downstairs. And we know Collingwood for a long time have performed really well when they're the underdog. And we'll see what we're made of today, because I know down in the rooms, the boys are quietly confident that if we can replicate our best footy, we're going to be hard to beat.
You sit side by side with Bucks, and he's a true mate of yours, has been for a long, long time. Now, how's he travelling seriously internally? Like, is there any signs, any cracking signs at all by the coach?
No, there's not. And, I mean, he's probably the most resilient person, and, you know, he's got one of the strongest characters I've ever come across in 25 years of footy. He's obviously very serious, but when you know him away from footy, and, Robbo, you know him away from footy as well, he's pretty calm, he's pretty relaxed. You have to absorb, though, some of that external criticism that comes your way, but you know, having sat in the hot seat for a couple of years at the Crows too, you have to listen to people that you really trust, and there are people that can tell it to you how it is. And I don't know, Bucks has got certain people in the media that he really does listen to and gives him advice, and I know that he's got a lot of people close to him, you know, both at the football club and personally too, that he draws a lot of advice from as well. So I think he's going okay. I know a win today would help him, and it would definitely help the footy club, and you know, be a really good opportunity today to beat a side that's you know, right at the top of the ladder and undefeated and playing some good footy.
Sando, sorry to harp on it, but it is such a big talking point. We'll get onto the game shortly, but as you just alluded to, you have sat in that seat, and we've got Rusie up here as well, who's sat in the seat, but it hasn't been on. Probably the only coach that actually hasn't been sacked in the history of the game. But you know, how tough How tough is it when you're going through all of that turmoil and the media is just coming at you and at you and at you, and I'm sure you're there giving bucks as a good friend and also as obviously professionally as a coach, but how tough is it?
It depends how much it depends how much of it you actually choose to absorb. And we're probably guilty, all of us, when we played well as players, is to grab the paper on a Monday morning and quickly flick to the best players and stuff. But you're actually pretty good as well at ignoring the media a little bit when you're not going so well. And as I mentioned to Robbo just before, you know, I think Bucks and even myself when I was coaching, you probably rely on about four or five people internally at the football club and another three or four people, whether it's good friends or people involved in footy and people you really trust, to just give it to you straight. And Bucks has got those people, and we know that he's tough and he's resilient and he's certainly made of the right stuff. And the way that he played as a player, and even, you know, what he's been through as a coach, and he's seen success at this footy club as a player, and early on as a coach, you know, he reached a prelim final. So I think he's got the recipe there. It's just ensuring that we play good, solid four quarters consistently, and we've shown in patches that we can do it, but yeah, we definitely need to do it more often.
Well, I reckon that's the key, Sando, because having coached against Collingwood last year, there was a couple of quarters I think we played against you where your pressure was as good as anything I'd seen over the course of the 3 years in coaching Melbourne. And in fact, I had to say to the players at the end of the game, because invariably when Melbourne beat someone, everyone said how badly the opposition played. And I had to remind my players, don't worry, that team was absolutely playing fantastic football. But is that the most frustrating thing? I think as a neutral observer, it's probably that lack of consistency, and we touched on it before. Just your brand, which is really strong, you know, for a quarter or a half, can drop off. Is that the most frustrating thing, you know, coming to Collingwood and seeing that?
Yeah, it is, Ruzzi. And I think one of the, I guess, the talking points, which we don't hear much about, is that typically the sides that it consistently play in September, play finals, they're not just experienced, but they've got shared experience. Actually, play a lot of football together. And when I started my journey as a senior coach at Adelaide, we had a young squad, but with a lot of experience in it still. But now they've played 5 or 6 years together, and Collingwood's a bit the same. You know, you look across our 22 today, you've got Lyndon Dunn playing his first game for the club, and a guy like Henry Shady coming down from Gold Coast. You know, Billy Elliott's missed 18 months of footy. So it's about all those guys, even though they've been around the system for a couple of years and sort of, been at the club, it's about getting shared experience as well. You know, Daniel Wells coming into the team with, you know, 280 games of experience. Chris Mayne coming across from Fremantle, who's not playing today. But it's about those guys getting the chemistry of playing together as well and learning how to, play a Collingwood style that the Bucks wants to play. Playing it consistently for four quarters, because we are seeing glimpses of it, but it's not happening for long enough.
Hey, Sando, I reckon Collingwood supporters that turn up today, and I certainly am as someone who's going to call the game today, I want to see what Collingwood did 3 weeks ago against the Sydney Swans. Win, lose or draw, it was a club record 115 tackles. How do you get the players to apply that same attitude, the application, the intent to whatever the result is, that's the brand? How do we replicate that?
Yeah, you're right, and it's got to come... I don't necessarily believe it comes from the top down. I don't think it's up to, you know, Pendlebury and Adams and Sidebottom and Treloar. I think it's more from the bottom up. You need those young kids like Broomhead and Phillips and Smith. You need those young kids to really set the tone for you. And quite often I think the big cultural shifts you see at football clubs through generations have not necessarily been through great leadership down. It's been through young men coming into the team and saying, you know, I belong and I'm going to make a difference. And I saw that at Geelong, you know, when I just started coaching there in 2007. It was those young kids like Enright and Harley and Scarlett and Joel Corey, Cameron Ling, those sort of kids that came in and really came from the bottom up. And I think that's what we'll see over time from Collingwood, is we'll see some of these young kids come into the squad and really be determined to make sure that they are the future and not have to rely on Pendlebury having, you know, 35 possessions and 10 tackles every game. We sort of need a good four-quarter performance from the full squad of 22 to get the points.
Good on you, Sando. We appreciate your time. Best of luck to you and the Collingwood Footy Club today.
Thanks, Harry.
Sando. Nice to speak to Brendan Sanderson on the Sunday Rub.
Ruzzi, if you're in charge of the whiteboard here, you've got Levi Greenwood clearly going to get a run-with role for Collingwood against Geelong midfield today. Would you send him to Joel Selwood or Patrick Dangerfield? who would you be wanting to lock down on more?
Well, probably a part of it is going to be what you think Greenwood's strengths are. You know, I mean, because they're very different players. You know, Paddy Dangerfield, if you can corral him and keep him in a stoppage, he's not as dangerous, but you don't want him running outside. Joel Selwood is really the guy that just keeps getting in and in and in and in and in. So if I had to pick, I'd probably go with Selwood because it's more the way around Greenwood. He would play well in that role because he's pretty tough inside. He's pretty clean inside anyway. I probably don't think he's got the speed to go with Dangerfield. And Dangerfield's one probably goes forward more, whereas Selwood sits around the ball. So if you are going to do that, then he'd be the one I'd be doing
it with. You've got Crisp, who can also play a shutdown role in the midfield as well.
You don't want to be going too negative, though. I agree with you. I'd go Selwood just because of how inspirational he is, and he's the captain. And yep. if you quell him, then I don't know, Dangerfield might get off the leash, but you can't go after both. I agree. Otherwise, that's too negative. Just on to Sando talking before, without being disrespectful, when you're talking about Collingwood, bringing up names like Main and Wells and Dunn and these guys, really... I mean, you know, we know what they can give.
Mm. Main's an emergency again.
And
today.
That's right, and they're not even in the team. Mm. And Dunn comes in because they're giving Reed a rest. So that's, you know, to me, wow, that was a very unusual comment.
I think too, Duck is, and look, it varies at different clubs who controls. The draft is pretty simple. Your recruiters do that. Your list managers do the draft, et cetera, et cetera. But it can vary at different clubs in terms of players that you bring in. Yeah, certainly. My experience at Sydney and at Melbourne was I would have the say along with Jason Taylor and Todd, Bernie Vince, Daniel Cross, guys like that. That fairly and squarely has to rely on the coach. Now, that may vary Collingwood, but I'm not suggesting it is. And I think some of the questions around Collingwood are rightly directed at their list management. I don't think their list management... I don't mind the Wells thing because I'm a big supporter. That gives you a point of difference. It gives you someone you can... And we saw last week, Jay-Z, what an impact he made. I don't mind the Will Hoskin-Elliott thing because it adds speed. But when you get Main. A group of players... Well, I don't know where Main fits in, you know?
It's pretty simple. You've got a side that has won one game by 1 point.
Yep.
That's it for the year. And neither Dunn or Main are in their best 22.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the point. And I think the criticism of Wells comes on the back of maybe some... You know, it goes back to Quinton Lynch and Jesse White's in and out of the side. James Aish can't get a game. So there's a lot of players that have been recruited as experienced players that aren't in that football team. I think Wells is a really good addition to that team because you can throw him off half-back. They need some runners off half-back. You can play him high half-forward. He had speed. He had ball use to that midfield. I like... But they've made some really bad blues over the journey.
And you're calling Main... You're putting Main in that basket.
Well, you have to at this stage because he's playing the seconds.
So. The other thing, with all due respect to Sando,
it's not
is,
a puzzle, Jay.
I reckon you've got to ask your leaders to start to set the tone from the opening bounce. It's not coming from the bottom up because the kids will look to what the senior players do, and it's up to the senior players, Scotty Pendlebury, Treloar, players in and around the midfield that have to set the tone from the opening bounce. It's about work rate. It's about intent. It's about defensive pressure because if the senior players aren't doing it, the kids will simply follow the example of those experienced players.
And just quickly, Swatter, all from today, and I know we'll get down and talk about the game more in depth when we get closer to it, but I just want to see some sort of movement, some quick movement into their forward line. Darcy Moore's going to be playing up there. Get the ball into the kid quick. Yeah. Try to isolate him. Move the ball. Let's not chip, chip, chip. Let players get back. Let's see some sort of good ball movement.
And I think on that, there's some structural things. I think Varko to halfback or Wells to halfback is that Jaden Hunt, Johansson, they're the ones that straighten you up and get you on your bike. If you've got too many, Jeremy Howe has been in really good form, but he's a spot kicker. Yeah. He's an intercept marker. He's not a line breaker. They don't have a line breaker down there. I think Varko can do it. I think Wells can do it. And I think you're absolutely right, Duck. You're not going to be able to run every single time, but you need someone down there that
Varko
threatens.
Why not have Varko and Wells off half-back and Jeremy Howe as a floating third tall defender?
When were Collingwood at their absolute best? Think of the last 5 years. When were they at their best? I'll tell you when. When Harry O or Harry Labumba and Heath Shaw were running off half-back.
Just who was that, Harry?
Harry Labumba. When they played off half-back and they ran and carried the footy, Collingwood won.
Yep.
And guess what? They got rid of both.
Mm. Duck is starting to get in fine form. He's in that situation, Swatter, where he's asking questions and then answering them himself. And when
all came off the back of when Daniel Menzel said, yeah, great point, Duck. Yes.
You might have to do that with your quiz, too.
Well,
and
you
ask the questions and answer them yourself.
You know, when he gets in that situation, he's ready to have a very, very big Sunday afternoon.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
Oh, I think there's a lot
You're
of what
amused.
About me in that.
Are you doing the voiceover?
No, that's not me. Sounds You're like amused you. By that more than
yeah, well, he rang during the week and he said, don't forget my stinger this week because I like it and it gives me a nice lead-in.
Might have another one for not being able to, you know, perform well in the quiz.
We talked earlier about the Hawthorn's selection dilemmas, and that's going to be a massive story, boys. But I reckon the other big issue is clearly going to be Nathan Buckley's future, depending on what happens today. But I'll tell you where this man deserves some credit, and that is when they designed his last contract. Nathan Buckley actually pushed for it only to be a one-year deal. So he said to the club, look, just give me the 1 year because at the end of next year, which is this season, 2017 season, you will know whether I can coach or not, clearly. So he's as I understand it, his manager said, hang on a sec, Nathan, what if you do get a two-year deal? Because then that's an extra $600,000 if you do get the lemon and sass, or at least gives you another year and some excuses possibly. But Nathan was the one who pushed and said, no, I only want a one-year deal because if I do get the sack, I don't want the club to face a $600,000 payout. And we've got this ugly situation we've had in the past couple of years. With
that's a great story, JT.
Senior coaches getting these massive payouts. So to his absolute credit, Nathan Buckley, he was the one who said it was only 1 year deal. I think we all sort of assume it was the club who pushed that, but it was Nathan Buckley. But Eddie Maguire, right, he's always had this view that he thinks poor clubs sack their coaches mid-season. So I think it will be Eddie and the board's strong view that whatever happens with Nathan this year, that they will try and keep him in the position for the whole season. Yet in the background, they'll be looking at alternatives if they do decide that he's not the man. But Eddie has pushed always. It's always been his view for as long as he's been at Collingwood. Is that he doesn't believe they should sack coaches mid-season. That's what poor clubs do, is his view. So I don't think we'll have this ugly sort of mid-season, unless Nathan wants to step away of his own volition.
And this is a favourite, I mean favourite son of that football club as well.
Yeah. Doesn't mean it always finishes the way it deserves to finish with a legend.
It doesn't, but there's certainly an extra amount of respect there, surely.
My view is that the board of Collingwood at the moment are pretty nervous about this, and I know that Eddie, before the Anzac Day game, was in the rooms before the game and was very conscious of the fact that this was a massive game for the Collingwood Football Club. So that was he was certainly front of his mind how much they needed to win last week.
What are you trying to say?
Certainly this week. Well, yeah, I'm told he was saying before the game, we just got to win today, boys. This is a massive game.
Well, you got to win every week.
Yep.
No,
there was an extra.
Every week.
No, my point is, Schwatter last week was different. There was a real edge to his body language, etc. Today's the same. Next week they got Carlton at home.
I would agree. I think sacking a coach mid-season can do more disruption and create more confusion in a club that's already under significant pressure. For me, the only two reasons that you think about a decision like that would be if a coach has lost the group, and I don't believe that Nathan's lost the group, or the board has someone in the wings ready to go that can fill the void, and it would need to be a good candidate. So I think it's a smart decision, irrespective of what happens today, next week, or the rest of the year.
Well, they do play Carlton next week, and then I think the night after they've got their 125th year celebration. So that will be a flat atmosphere if they lose the next couple of games. It'll be interesting. Hey, the deliberate rule, fellas, there's a huge watch on this at the moment, and the really ugly part of it, Duck, is when a player kicks the ball out of a stoppage, it goes 40 metres and tumbles out, right? The umpires are taking a really harsh line on the intent of that, but I tell you what's got everyone miffed at the moment is when they see the player who can pick it up, but sensing it could be called deliberate, chaperones the ball over the boundary line. Now, surely we have to make a tweak to this rule, and I'd be happy for them to do this now, to say if the onus is on that player who is within the ball, who is close to the ball to pick it up. If they can pick it up, then it can't be deliberate. Can it? Like, don't you agree that at the moment when you've got people watching the ball go out of bounds because they know it'll be called deliberate is a really ugly for the game?
I do agree. And if it's really, really obvious, I agree. But we're now fixing up a grey with another grey and another grey. And sometimes the umpires are 100 metres away when they pay that rule.
Well,
so
what would you do to the deliberate
rule? How close
rule?
Do you know? How close are they to the boundary? The deliberate rule on Friday night was simply wrong.
Yep.
They got wrong
multiple
decisions
ones.
Wrong. Right. Last weekend, I thought they were brilliant. So what the umpires have done, so let's understand one thing. This our game is just so hard to umpire, and I don't like criticising the umpires, but if I say one thing about the other night, although they got it wrong, they were consistently wrong. Mm. They were consistently poor the other night, so that's at least a tick. So they're going...
Because they were consistently poor.
Well,
so you're saying the rule's not broken.
So, Howie, what I want is consistency. So be consistently crap or consistently good. And last, on Friday night, they were
you're
consistently
with him,
crap.
Hey, you got this glazed look.
Yeah, but no, I'm not disagreeing. I agree with Duck. What my point is Jay-Z.
You agree
we
with
keep,
Duck.
A tick for being we keep best. Bringing in rules, and then we talk about the rule changes to tweak the rule changes.
Well, it's not,
can we just stop changing the rules? Can we stop changing the rules?
Thank you, Rudy.
Can we abandon the laws of the game committee? I was at a function on Friday morning. The Beverly Hills Junior Footy Club, 50-year celebration, my old junior footy club. And one of the biggest talking points was on rules. And I said to them, I said, well, look, I haven't seen these fan votes. I believe the fans, you know, determining a lot of these rules. I said, do you guys in this room know what the rules are? And every single person said no. Mm. So I don't know where these... And you know what the other thing they wanted? No more rule changes. Yeah. No more rule changes.
What if you stuck with a bad one, though?
Change it.
Point three.
Third one. Hey, Collingwood versus Geelong today. We got the best goal-kicking team against the worst goal-kicking team. Collingwood's goal accuracy has been absolutely poor. I want to bring your attention to Alex Fasolo. He had a shot last week. Scott Pendlebury, the captain, came over to him, gave him a sort of reassuring tap on the backside because it just looks like he's really suffering the yips and his headspace is all over the shop. Alex Fasolo's kicked 9 goals, 13 for the season. Daniel Menzel, who we spoke to before, kicked 15 goals, 6. And there's a massive discrepancy. Ruzi, what do you tell players and Duck as well when someone is just clearly got the putting yips or the goal-kicking yips and is really suffering? How do you turn that headspace around?
Look, I mean, the only thing you can do is practice. Now, the thing you can't do is actually bring 40, 50,000 people into a stadium. But you've got to get back to your routine and you just got to keep doing it. Equally, and Duck, you kick way more goals than any of us in the room. Equally, there's a difference between I think I can kick this goal or I am going to kick this goal.
Yep.
And I think when you go back, and I guess I did it as well as a player. Geez, I hope I kick this goal as opposed to I will kick this goal. And I think you can really underestimate that power of positive thinking and thinking this goal. I suspect most players, Duck, when they go through this, I think I can, I hope I can, as I will.
Yeah, spot on. And you're right, it's just practice. And if the sports science guy comes up to you and says, get off the track, you've done an up, tell him to get stuffed. So my job is here to kick goals. That's what I'm paid to do.
Yep.
And if I don't do that, then I'm not doing my job properly. So as simple as that. Practice, practice, practice. And you're right, the good shots at goal, everyone has the same negative thoughts. They say to themselves, I've got to kick this goal. Don't miss this goal. It's those who are able to execute under those thoughts that are the good kicks at goal. The other ones that continue to have those negative thoughts all the way through are the ones that are missing right now.
Vintage Duck today, Jay-Z.
He's up.
We really appreciate the time of our next guest. He's got a bit going on at the moment. The coach of the Sydney Swans, John Longmire, is on the line now. G'day, John. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. No problems.
Horse, it's fantastic to have senior coaches on because as much as we can sort of speculate in the media, we certainly don't get the insight that you guys do. I mean, I congratulate the Swans on blooding a lot of young kids. Even last year in your grand final year, it was fantastic. And clearly this year you've had a lot of injuries and you've continued to blood young players. Do you think there is a tipping point, though? It is very, very difficult to maintain a really high standard as you guys have done for the last 6 years. Do you think there's a tipping point in terms of the number of kids when you get them in the team?
I think you've got to be mindful of that, Ruzi. Certainly, we've since round one last year introduced sort of 13 debutants over that sort of one and a bit year period. So we've had a pretty high turnover during that area. And look, I think last year certainly we were able to blood the younger players into our team on the back of some really strong senior performances. In essence, that's made it easier for those younger kids to play. And this year we've also kept on introducing the younger kids, but we haven't had that consistent performance from our senior group, and that puts pressure on right across the board. There's no question about that, and you've got to be mindful that you don't reach that tipping point. And at times we might have, but quite ironically, some of the kids have been some of our better players at times.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think the other thing that probably is underestimated, which you can't do a lot about now, but yeah, when you do turn up to pre-season training, you've got a lot of injuries, you've got a lot of guys rehabbing, particularly when you're playing in a grand final. And one of the things I talked to the boys about before was perhaps someone like Alir, where if you've got a full list to pick from, you end up giving him 3 or 4 weeks in the NIAFL, and you're able to generate that pre-season through some more content around training. But I guess the tendency is to try, you bring him in and then he's out of form, then you've got to drop him again. So that's been a bit of an issue for you as well. A lot of guys haven't had that pre-season.
Yeah, look, you're always going to have reduced pre-seasons, and we can't complain about too much because it means you're obviously in the grand final. So you try and have that problem, if you call it a problem, every year. Alir is probably the one you bring up. I mean, he played last year some sensational senior footy on the back of a fantastic pre-season and playing really well in our reserves before we brought him in. We lost Dane Rampey round one this year, and we brought Alir in probably a bit earlier than his form warranted it, but we just needed another tall. And look, he's been working on his game at the NFL level. He was pretty good again Friday night, so he's starting to get there, which is really good. We just need to make sure we get some right game time into him.
Yeah, one of the things yesterday, Horse, I was a bit critical of, but I did mention in the call that I'm not privy to the discussions you guys have prior to the game, but Buddy definitely played a lot more up between the arcs. Is that a little bit around your inexperience and maybe trying to get a bit more run up through your midfield rather than just sort of sitting him inside forward 50?
Yeah, absolutely. We wanted some, if you look at the team yesterday, Gary Rowan, obviously Heaney, coming back after some long-term injury, Papley as well, which played a bit deeper in our forward line, but also we added Rose after we lost Kurt Tippett. And normally Reedy plays that role, I guess, particularly on the MCG. But we just wanted to get Lance up the ground a little bit to make sure we had that connection coming out of defence and through the midfield area into our forward line, because we had a number of blokes that were probably forward centre type players, and we wanted to get Lance up the ground and get the ball in there. And quite often we were struggling to get the ball inside 50 yesterday as well, so we needed someone to get it in there.
Horse, would it be fair to say, just to back up what Roosie said there with Alir, but guys like Rowan and Heaney and these guys, given that you lose those early games, you probably do give them another game or two before bringing them back. They're probably not quite ready for senior footy. Would it be fair to say that also?
Yeah, each of the individuals, Duck, I think you go through them and you make a decision based upon how they're travelling. I mean, Isaac, we've been actually quite surprised how he's picked it up. He was probably our best player over the preseason in the training sense, and he's certainly had a knocked about with his glandular fever. He was a bit quiet last week. We thought he was actually pretty good yesterday. Papley and Rowan, you could probably argue that if we're up and going really well in our seniors, that and winning games, whether those blokes would have come back through the reserves. But we need those blokes in the senior team. We need them playing well, and we're confident that they'll start to play well, and they just need more game time, and we've got two games under their belts now, and hopefully they get better next week.
Hey, Horse, it was concerning watching the vision of Gary Rowan yesterday. What's the latest update today?
Yeah, he should be out of hospital today. He's had the all clear given in regards to all the scans that he had on his neck and his spine, and looked really nasty, obviously, but he should be out of hospital today, and he's coming back to Sydney late this afternoon, so all good, but obviously a bit of whiplash and a bit of concussion there as well. So we'll have to see how he goes during the week. But from a serious point of view, he's pulled up pretty well.
That's great news, John, because a lot of people were concerned when we saw it yesterday. The Football World coach seems shocked that you guys are 0-6. Are you shocked?
Well, we're not happy with it, but we're always aware of how close the competition is, and if you're off your game just a little bit, then anyone can beat you. And we've always been aware of that. We've never taken that for granted. And, you know, our best game was probably round two against the Bulldogs, when we in front in the last quarter. We in front again the last quarter against the Pies, and we haven't been able to get over the line. And that's meant that, a few things in our games have suffered, and we're not really getting much right at all in our game. We need to get better in a lot of things, and some basic errors that we're making with and without the ball.
And do you have to change your approach? We had Luke Hodge on a couple of weeks ago and said, how does his approach to leadership change when his team aren't winning? You've had such a successful period there. Do you have to change the way you go about things when you're 0-6 rather than 6-0, just the way you deal with your players?
Oh, you've got to be mindful of that and being aware of what the situation requires. And every situation is different. Every player is different too. So you need to be aware of that. Some can be pushed a bit harder than others. And you need to be aware of, obviously, how they're feeling, but also maintaining the standards that's required to play AFL football and getting that balance right. You can't shy away from that either. So getting that balance from week to week right is the challenge for all of the coaching staff and senior players in particular. You know, we need to get it right. We clearly haven't got it right as good as what we wanted up until now. We need to get it right now.
John, specifically, what do you make of the pressure and the contested ball at the moment? Because you're ranked 17th and 18th in those two. Very un-Sydney-like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not winning the ball around the midfield area anywhere near with the consistency that we did last year. And you know, we need to get the ball forward more. There's no question about that. Take the pressure off our defence. It all happens and all begins in that midfield area. We've been a bit down on numbers through there and form, and that showed in those numbers. There's no question about that. So we've got to get it right.
And the update on Kurt Tippett, he hurt his hip in the last training session? Was it on Thursday he hurt himself? What's the prognosis there? How long are you going to be without Kurt Tippett?
He went up in a ruck contest in the last drill at training on Thursday and sort of strained a hip flexor muscle. He was pretty sore. We gave him till Friday. He didn't pull up any good at all. So no good for last week for Saturday. We're hopeful that he'll be okay this week. There's no certainty yet, though.
Yeah.
Obviously, being a Sunday game gives him an extra day to prepare and be okay, but we just don't know. We'll have to see how the week progresses.
Yeah, Horse, you touched on it before a bit about your game plan is sort of a little bit falling apart, as it can tend to do with young kids. And Jay-Z mentioned about the contested ball. But I guess one of the most frustrating areas for you, without having McVeigh, who's a really, really good spot kicker off halfback, gets you into terrific positions. And probably Rampy's the other one that's more the speed guy that gets you out of defence. Yeah, that's sort of taken away a lot of your game style. Going coast to coast this year has been really difficult for you.
Yeah, I mean, and particularly if we haven't been getting the ball through the midfield as consistently as what we want, we are putting the defence under pressure. And Dane in particular, in All-Australian last year, he's such a quality player on the last line and being able to get it going forward. We've been happy with how Lewis Mellican's come into the team the last couple of weeks. He's done okay. And Jakey Lloyd's done okay for us at halfback as well. But there's no question that Rampy and McVeigh would help. McVeigh should be available for selection this week, whether we play him or not. It just depend upon what the team looks like and obviously, you know, how underdone he is compared to the others.
Hey, Horse, it's getting very difficult, but at some point in the next few weeks, if it keeps going the way it's going, mathematically it's going to be almost impossible to make the eight. So at what point do you change the focus moving forward for the remainder of the year?
Well, Swatter, the focus is always about the now and the future. No matter where you are in the ladder, you've got to be able to get that balance right. And you know, it's pretty difficult for us to say, oh, listen, we'll just play young kids because, you know, as I said before, we've played 13 since round one last year and no question we'll probably play one or two others before the end of this year. But we're giving those boys an opportunity anyway and trying to be competitive at the same time. Whether we're on top of the ladder or where we are now, that's what we need to do. We'll continue to do that, keep strengthening up our list and getting experience into the players that we need to, but also at the same time trying to be competitive. We haven't got that balance right yet. Whilst we've got the games into the young blokes, we haven't got the balance of being competitive right yet.
Coach, we really appreciate your time, your honesty and your openness. Thanks for having a chat with us on the Sunday Rub.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Great to speak to John Longmire, who was very, very frank in that discussion.
It puts it into perspective, though, not wanting to give them an out, but 13 new players since last year, and they continue to bring in new blood.
Yeah, I think that's our job. Our obligation, I think, in the media is to give the Swans fans out there and football fans in general a reason, because it's just too simple to sit here and go, oh, they're 0-6, they're playing terrible. Yeah, and there are reasons for the fact that I don't think any of us, Ducky, you mentioned before, I think you asked the horse, or I mean, none of us thought they were going to be 0-6, but clearly there's some reasons around. If you don't have pre-seasons, it's very, very difficult. If you play, I reckon the tipping point for young kids, it's probably around 5 or 6. You can't have a lot more than that in a team that's won a grand final last year and then expect them the following year to be at that level. So there's definitely reasons. And it's great to have John Long. It's always good to have the senior coaches on because I think, yeah, they're really honest with their assessment and they're really good at giving their time and trying to fill in their supporters around, you know, what the reasons are. Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M Rocks Footy.